welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. Good morning. With me today is my podcast partner, Mike Gianfagna. Hi, Mike.
Good morning, Dan.
And our guest is Wally Rhines. Good morning, Wally.
Hello, Dan.
All right. What we want to talk about today is consolidation and deconsolidation in the semiconductor industry. We've been seeing a series of acquisitions, and some people are concerned about the semiconductor competitive landscape and the supply chain. Wally, you covered this in your book, Predicting Semiconductor Business Trends, which is available on Amazon.com, by the way. So, Wally, can you step us through, you know, first the deconsolidation of the semiconductor industry and then talk about some of the consolidation that's been going on today?
Sure, Dan. Actually, I don't think most people realize it, but from about 1965 till 2014, the semiconductor industry pretty consistently deconsolidated. New companies formed rapidly as new technologies came along, and those new companies grew at a faster percentage growth rate than the largest companies. And so one by one, they moved up the ranks. And so there was a lot of churn in the top 10 semiconductor companies. So much, in fact, that there's only one left from the 1950s. That's TI, and it's about number five now. So that churn caused a deconsolidation, almost a continuous decrease in the combined market share of the top 10 and top 50 semiconductor companies. And the number one semiconductor company throughout that period up through almost 2020, had 12 to 15% market share. The names changed from TI to NEC to Intel. But the recent data says Intel's market share, which has increased a little above that, has been all because of the boom in servers, not due to acquisitions. So what we're facing now is a change. We're now seeing acquisitions that are in fact increasing the combined market share of the top 10 companies. Some of that is because the DRAM industry has consolidated, and so Samsung, Hynix, Micron have the largest share, whereas their combined share was only 50% in year 2000. But we're also seeing consolidation in these latest moves, ADI Maxim and AMD Xilinx, Marvell Inphi, and especially NVIDIA ARM. You know, these are big. These will cause some consolidation. They're largely in the data center space, but it's a new trend, and there's some reasons why that's happening.
Yeah, you know, one of the more impressive acquisitions I saw was Nuvia. They were acquired by Qualcomm for over $1 billion. You know, they were a startup. So, you know, I guess people see those as consolidation, but really, you know, they're deconsolidation because a lot of people are, you know, leaving companies and starting their own companies. But we've had some huge acquisitions coming up. And I'm guessing that's partly due to the stock pricing, right?
Yes. So cheap currency is a natural motivator of acquisitions. If you can borrow money at very low rates, then any profitable company you acquire is likely to be accretive to your earnings into your revenue. So let's say you can borrow money at 4% and you acquire a company that has 5% operating profit, then it adds to your earnings immediately and it adds to your revenue. So why not do it? And we're seeing a lot of that, the all cash acquisitions. But some of the recent ones are even for a mixture of stock and cash. And in the case of AMD Xilinx, it's all stock. But there you look at the case, Xilinx is very much more profitable than AMD. AMD has cheap currency in that their stock has risen over 150% over the past year, 2,200% since Lisa Su took over. So they've got some cheap currency to shop with, as does NVIDIA.
Yeah, you know, Mike and I have been acquired quite a few times. I mean, none of the companies that I have worked for over my 37 years are in existence. They've all been acquired. And even you were acquired finally, Wally, just this last list go around. I think that was your first time.
Had a perfect record up till then, but no, finally gave in 2017 and Siemens acquired Mentor.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest acquisitions, the most accretive acquisitions I've seen. I mean, it was just huge. And the result that I've experienced with the growth of the Mentor division or the Siemens EDA division now has been just phenomenal, far more, I would guess, than Synopsys and Cadence. That's certainly a big one. You know, the ones Mike and I have been involved with are certainly smaller. I mean, I've been involved with five in the last 6 years. And I think, and this is in the semiconductor ecosystem, and I think that's going to continue, and that always has been. But in the EDA market, which Mike and I spent a good amount of our time, and so have you, Wally, it really is in consolidation, right?
I think that one truly is. We had a long period, over 20 years, where the combined market share of the three largest companies, Mentor, Cadence, Synopsys, was very steady at about 75% market share, plus or minus 3 points. And then in 2013, 2014, it started ticking up. As new startups slowed down a little, that is, fewer of them, and a lot of acquisition activity continued. So by the end of 2017, the big three were up to 85%, and it's a little tougher to track numbers now, but I'm quite confident they're in the 90% range by now.
Getting back to my experience with M&A, it's true. All the small companies I've been involved in are just a fond memory now.
There's an interesting discussion here on semiconductor versus EDA, though. In the EDA industry, one can argue that the consolidation is making bigger, more broad-based offerings, and it's healthy. Semiconductor industry, I'm not sure that's true. My experience, for example, is a front-row seat on the ASIC business, which I think, frankly, has suffered as a result of these consolidations. ASIC is a challenging business that has some uncertainty and a huge amount of technology investment necessary to deliver on what is arguably really important chips. But as the consolidation keeps going and companies have other forms of revenue that are more reliable, ASSP kinds of things, maybe ASIC is getting a back seat here. So it's suffered a bit, I think. The industry has changed as well as the players.
Yeah, Mike, I think you're right. Acquisitions are not necessarily good for everyone in the industry, much less the customers. So some of them do create economies. Historically, economies of scale were quite important in semiconductor because the bigger your fab, the lower your cost per wafer. But the rise of the silicon foundries changed all that, leveled the playing field, so that the difference in your profitability from buying in larger quantities became less significant. The price you paid for wafers could vary 5 to 8 points, which is a help, but you didn't go out and just buy companies to build bigger market share to fill your capacity, unless you were in areas like analog for ADI and others, and even they are using more and more foundry wafers.
Yeah, you know, I think the semiconductor industry will continue to deconsolidate, primarily because a lot of system companies are building their own chips. So, you know, companies like Apple is viewed as a semiconductor company now, and you know, they're being followed by many other companies, including car companies, you know, like Tesla and such. They're making their own chips. So we're going to see a lot more semiconductor companies. But it'll be a hybrid of system versus system and semiconductor companies versus just the traditional fabless chip companies. But you know, that actually is changing the ecosystem, specifically EDA. So EDA is consolidating, and I think one of the reasons is because systems companies are looking for bigger solutions. You know, they're not looking for point tools. They're looking for bottom-up solutions to help them, you know, build systems and not just chips. And so, you know, these systems companies are really driving the consolidation, in my opinion, of the big three. You know, Cadence, Synopsys, and Siemens EDA. they're getting a much bigger piece of the pie based on the changing of the semiconductor landscape.
I think you're right, Daniel. In fact, this has been a great boom for the EDA industry because their customer base has dramatically expanded. Now the Google, Facebook, Amazon, Alibaba, all these, in addition to Apple and many more, are big semiconductor customers doing their own designs, buying from foundries, and they have gone from almost negligible percentage of the total foundry wafers in 2010 to over 20% today, and they're the fastest growing. They're creating rapid growth for the EDA industry, which traditionally only grew about a point faster than the semiconductor industry, and more recently has been growing substantially faster. And they're also, as you say, deconsolidating the semiconductor industry. If you just look at total semiconductor revenue, which becomes a little harder to track, you have to look at wafer purchases and then the revenue there on the ultimate revenue is not easily tracked because if it goes into an iPhone or an Amazon server, you don't actually know the end numbers. But I think your conclusion is correct. That is a deconsolidation effect. That's revenue that used to go to other semiconductor companies that now is absorbed in the systems companies buying wafers and then serving their own semiconductor needs.
It's an interesting perspective, Wally, on the consolidation and change in the semiconductor industry. And my comment of ASIC, in listening to the commentary here, I'm wondering if ASIC was changed by the consolidation, or if ASIC was changed by the customer base and their migration away from the ASIC model and to a more fully owned front-to-back design flow. It certainly works for the big companies. And oddly, for a lot of the small AI startups, the same thing is happening. So I'm wondering where ASIC fits in the future. It might be a very different business.
Yeah, interestingly, we go through Makimoto's wave, and we go from customization to standardization. Right now, we are in a customization wave. And you would normally say, wow, that must be great for the ASIC business. But the problem here, it's not all going to the ASIC business. It's a lot of it is Apple doing their own chips, Amazon, Google, Facebook, they're all designing their own printed circuit boards for servers and designing their own chips for special purpose machine learning applications. And so instead of going to a standard product, which is sold across the board, or a custom product that is designed and managed by an ASIC company, they're taking over much of that value add, and that's not producing the windfall that you would normally expect for the traditional ASIC companies.
Yeah, you know, that's something that in all the ASIC companies I've been involved in over the years, and there's been quite a few, the concern always was the value would migrate upstream and downstream from us to the fabs and to the customer. And what do you know? That's actually happening.
Well, you know, let's not forget that the ASIC companies are huge enablers for the systems guys. You know, Apple's first chips were done by ASIC companies. Now, you should know this, Mike, right?
Well, yeah, and in retrospect, that was just a good training exercise. We should have been paid for training and not for the chips, because that was the main contribution there was teaching. And people learning how to do their own chips, and once they could, they did.
Yeah, because Apple started out with eSilicon, and then they moved to the ASIC model with Samsung. And you know, during that time, they acquired experience, like Mike said, and also technology, and they also acquired some companies. So they acquired some startup or some existing semiconductor companies and built talent. But you know, it all started with the ASIC model. So the ASIC model is really important to our industry, and I think it will continue, of course, even through all these consolidations. But Google's first chip was done by an ASIC company, and so many companies have used the ASIC business to get started. So I think that's been enabling the system guys to become powerhouse semiconductor companies, you know, like Apple and Huawei and the rest of the guys.
Yeah, it's sort of a temporal kind of thing, right? You can kind of look at FPGAs the same way. People start with a prototype on FPGA, and then if the volume goes high enough, they'll turn to an ASIC. Well, a lot of companies will start with an ASIC supplier, and then the volume goes high enough and they'll take it in-house and do it themselves. By the way, that that very early Apple interaction was some brilliance and some good luck. Our customer in those days was a company called Portal Player, and we were building the chip for them, and Apple got interested in Portal Player and put that chip in the first iPod, and the rest is history.
The Apple systems, the iPhones, if you look at the teardowns over the years, their SoC has absorbed so many chips, right? So you look at the motherboard of the iPhone, and there's all these companion chips, and one by one they disappeared, you know, like the GPU and stuff, and now the baseband. So, you know, that's part of the consolidation. But, you know, let's talk about the fabless revolution. You know, that was a big part of deconsolidation for our business. The foundries came and said, anybody can do a design, just, you know, throw it over the fence and we'll manufacture it for you. You don't have to have a huge amount of capital. And, you know, that spawned a huge amount of fabless semiconductor companies, you know, some of which are our industry leaders today.
That's certainly true. It was an enabler. Prior to that time, you had to come up with the money to build a fab. The fabs were small. They weren't very efficient. They couldn't support a diversity of processes. And when the downturn came and they had idle capacity, it led to dire consequences. The foundries were able to smooth all that out by having many, many different customers so that the ups and downs of any one company didn't perturb the system too much. And though there are periods of high demand, and right now there's a shortage for capacity for that's showing up particularly in the automotive industry, but also elsewhere, but it's greatly reduced compared to the days where everyone had their own fab. And the other thing that's happened is we've unleashed innovators and new startups by virtue of the fabless model, because now your great idea for a design can be implemented without making an investment in the manufacturing capacity. And that's allowed a lot of very creative people to do a lot of creative design work.
Yeah, so Wally, what do you know about the shortages that we're seeing in the news today?
Well, some of it was sort of predictable. You went into the year 2020, and COVID came along, and automotive companies were scrambling to reduce inventories because the demand initially turned way, way down. And so did a lot of other businesses. And so the natural result is the loadings are reduced, the inventories are reduced. And then surprise, in the second half of the year, that demand picked up. And you try to turn that capacity back on, but a wafer fab has a lead time. And you now are trying to rapidly increase the wafer count to catch up. We're going to produce more cars if we have the chips in 2021 than we did in 2019. And the problem is we can't turn on a dime. We have to ramp up. And that was sort of predictable in a way. I think there was some overreaction to COVID, but we will catch up. And most of us say we'll catch up in the third quarter of this year.
Yeah, I agree. You know, people have to understand there's a difference between capacity, which is the total amount of wafers that can be manufactured, versus utilization, which is how the fabs are utilized, how many they're actually manufacturing. And, you know, when companies cancel orders or push out orders, the fab utilization goes down, but you still have the capacity, right? And fab utilization is not at 100% all the time, right? It fluxes. So, yeah, I think second half of 2021, we're not going to have a problem.
Well, there's another thing going on, and that is, once again, as I mentioned earlier, Makimoto's wave. So if you go back to the 1980s, you know, 50% of the cars in the world used one of a few part types from Motorola for engine control. And similarly, for other automotive functions, there were standard products that were widely used by many, many automotive companies. Today, there's more and more customization, people doing unique designs for a particular subsystem or for a portion of the vehicle electronics, the driver assist. And so you have to inventory more parts. You have more likelihood of a shortage in an upturn because you're now dependent upon a single supplier, or at least you don't have a lot of companies using the same part. And so that's been a contributor, but that hasn't been the main force.
You know, one of the questions I have, especially with automotive, is who's buying all these new cars? I mean, we're driving less. We have many more ride-sharing opportunities. I mean, are we really looking at an automotive boom coming up, or are we just going to see another bubble?
Well, we're certainly seeing demand on the unit side. Now, traditionally, the world sells 90 million cars a year, and so we had a very light year, so people are likely to catch up. But I think we had a lot of other phenomena. One is that public transportation, which was on the rise, isn't as reliable if you have COVID going around, and so you're more likely to want to drive your own car. You have the electric car boom, where you have 500 different companies have announced they will introduce electric cars and light trucks, and that's been great for EDA because they're all designing some kind of electronics. And 200 companies have announced they will introduce autonomous drive vehicles or subsystems for those vehicles. And so there is a big design boom. There will be an inventory boom as more and more of those chips are released. And so it tends to exaggerate the constancy or the stability of those 90 million cars that are built every year. There's one thing I find interesting in the mergers and acquisitions. If you look, as I mentioned before, the world was doing plenty of mergers and acquisitions, but the semiconductor industry was either stable or deconsolidating up through 2014. And then you look at the acquisitions that occurred starting in 2015. 2015 was a record year. You had Broadcom, Altera, Freescale, NXP, Altera, Intel, and then the following year, you also had a lot. ARM was acquired by SoftBank, and Analog Devices acquired Linear Technology. So two really big years, and now we're looking at a big 2021 year period. But you take a look at the differences, and up until 2015, people were diversifying their businesses through acquisition or building economies of scale or other things. These acquisitions all focused on specialization, building large market share in specific markets. So my 21 years at Texas Instruments, we were a very diverse company. We produced everything you could make in the semiconductor industry. I used to joke that TI made everything in semiconductors except money. And the net result was that in the period since 2000, they focused down basically on analog and power devices, and they've done that through both acquisition of National Semiconductor as well as through spinning off businesses. But the net is they have decided to be a specialty company in a particular kind of technology. NXP, similarly, they've really doubled down on security and automotive. And you look at all these, you find there's a trend here, it's specialization. If we look at Avago, LSI, Broadcom, it's all data center. The networking, data center, east-west traffic, those things. And even Intel's and AMD's acquisitions of FPGA companies is largely feeding the data center. So I think what you're seeing is a specialization of semiconductors. It's no longer big general purpose semiconductor companies, it's specialty semiconductor companies, and that's where the acquisitions are targeted. Rather than diversifying the business, they're targeted at building a stronger share in specific segments of the business and taking advantage of economies of scale in product definition, marketing, customer interaction, things like that, rather than the economies of scale of manufacturing that could have been a driving force in the pre-foundry era.
Yeah, you know, one of the companies that I have been following, which has had a pretty impressive record, is Renesas Technology. You know, Renesas started out as a consolidation, right, of some of the biggest Japanese semiconductor makers that were maybe falling on hard times or seeing a business shrink. But, you know, Renesas is a combination of Hitachi, Mitsubishi, NEC, and maybe a couple others. And they have gone on an acquisition spree lately, certainly, but throughout the years. But they just announced an agreement to buy Dialog. Before they bought Integrated Device Technology. You know, they're working on, they're big in automotive, right? And they've been increasing their automotive strength, and now they're moving to, you know, autonomous car technology, sure. But is that one of the companies you have an eye on, Wally?
Well, it's certainly one of the really aggressive acquirers in the industry, $6 billion all in cash for the Dialog acquisition, which is basically the residual of what Apple didn't acquire. You know, they highlight, they like the mixed signal capability, low power technologies, the connectivity. They are certainly moving aggressively. I think people had to be pretty impressed by the kinds of multiples they're paying. But if you look at the industry in general, multiples are really very heady right now. You've got NVIDIA selling at 23 times revenue, not earnings. You have AMD at 10 times revenue, TI 11 times revenue, Xilinx 11 times revenue, Inphi 12 times revenue. The pricing has no precedent. And so you can say, why? Wow, how could Renesas afford to pay this kind of multiple? But the answer is, hey, that's what everybody's stock is selling for. So if your own multiple is high, then it's not so expensive. And so you look at NVIDIA, $40 billion for ARM, it seems like a pretty heady price, a pretty hefty multiple. But then NVIDIA at 23 times revenue, and 40 times book value, it probably makes sense. There was a mixed stock and cash deal.
So Wally, what do we have coming up in the future? What do you see is in regards to mergers, acquisitions, consolidation, deconsolidation? Give us a peek into your crystal ball.
So I think that the semiconductor industry, while it's going through a major wave of consolidation now, it will move through this and we'll see some deconsolidation. The reason I say that is these periods of free money don't go on forever. So in the next two or three years, interest rates are going to go up, and then these automatically accretive acquisitions are not going to be so automatic. That'll be certainly one factor. Another factor is that, as you've highlighted, the systems companies are in a wave of designing and buying their own semiconductors. That's causing market share to grow for the Googles, Facebooks, Amazon, Apples, and others. And that market share does come out of the semiconductor industry. And so that's a deconsolidating factor. And then third, I think we will see new innovation, new companies, and the long-term trend of new startups growing faster than the established companies will cause them to rise in the ranks and will cause a decrease in the combined market share of the top 50 companies once again, which has been temporarily halted, but long-term has been a declining factor.
Excellent, excellent content. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Wally. I think that's a wrap, and we hope to hear from you again. That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening and have a great day.